Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
They're wrapping things up here at Lee-Com Harbor Center. The blue team winds up winning 11-7 after a long shootout involving every single player on the team. That was kind of cool. We had one goal, like one of those kind of between the legs, backward. It was crazy. Some of the skill on display here is awesome for these young hockey players in the Sabres pipeline. So the development camp concludes after a 3-on-3 scrimmage and a full shootout. In the meantime, down here at Lee-Com Harbor Center as we head towards the holiday weekend, July 4th weekend, and of course training camp up next for the Buffalo Bills. That's the next thing on the docket, I would say, as far as Buffalo sports is concerned now that this has happened. We have both the NHL draft is over, obviously free agency has started, and there's our buddy Danny Gare walking on the ice ready to present the trophy to the blue team who wins 11-7. It is getting closer to football season, and that means we're going to start talking a lot more football. Going to bring in now Matt Verderam, who joins me on the West Her Hotline, and Matt writes for SI. He, don't hold against him, he talks about the Kansas City Chiefs a little bit. We'll talk about that, but also football with Matt. Matt, I apologize for the hockey sounds in the background, but we're down here watching some hockey today as we talk football.
Hey, you don't have to apologize to me. I'm a hockey guy. I played hockey for 20 years growing up, so
I love it.
I'm never going to be offended by hockey. I can't wait for hockey.
I love that. Where did you grow up playing hockey, and what was your hockey experience like?
I even though I live out in Chicago now, I grew up in New York. I grew up in the Catskills, mm-hmm. and then I went to school in Oswego, so like 3 hours from Buffalo. I did not play in Oswego. I would have loved to. They won the national championship when I was there in D3. But I played. I was a winger, and I grew up a huge Devils fan. Still am. So I've been a hockey fan and player since the mid '90s.
I love that. And of course, we have a relation here with Lindy Ruff, who was with the Sabres. Yep. He coached the Devils for a little while. Now he's back in Buffalo. But we're going through a 14-year NHL playoff drought here in Buffalo right now, Matt. That is hard to do. I mean, the Bills went 17 years in the NFL. People say, "What's worse?" I'm like, dude, you have to be able to make the playoffs in hockey every few years. I mean, there's so many teams do.
Yeah, no, like I said, I went to school in Oswego. I know a ton of people from Buffalo, a lot of Sabres fans, and there are very few fan bases in sports, but in the NHL that are better than Buffalo fans. They deserve a winner. They deserve somebody to go in there and turn that team around. I remember when I was in college, they had Briere and Drury and Ryan Miller and all. I mean, they were a really good team. It'd be fun. The sport's better when the Sabres are good. It's a lot more fun.
Yeah, and I remember this was even before. I mean, I'm older than you, but the Sabres-Devils, a couple of playoff series, especially the one in 94,
yeah,
goes
to
the four overtime game. Yeah, that's right. And Dave Hannon scores the goal, and and then they go to game seven, they go back to New Jersey, and obviously the Devils win that one. That's a long time ago. And those two teams, obviously, we know the Devils went on to win some Stanley Cups as well. Not yet here in Buffalo, though. In the meantime, as we turn the page from hockey and we start to look towards football, training camp coming up here for the NFL and teams, including the Buffalo Bills. But let's kind of rewind a little bit what happened over the weekend. I'm curious your thoughts on the big trade that went down between the Steelers and the Dolphins. A, why these two teams would make the trade, in your opinion, and B, how it impacts both teams.
I kind of feel like it's shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic with both of them. I don't understand. Like, so from the Steelers' perspective, okay, you get Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey is 31 years old, and he's not the same player he was 2-3 years ago. He's not terrible, but he's not a star corner who you look at and go, he can lock down half the field. That's not going to happen. They also have Porter Jr. on one side and Darius Slay on the other. So it makes you question the fit. Like, is he going to play inside? Are they going to move somebody else inside? And that we'll find out, I guess, when they're in Latrobe here in a few weeks. But it's interesting. Now, Fitzpatrick last year struggled comparatively to how he had played in previous years. I get it. I understand maybe the Steelers felt like they were getting off of a player who was on the decline, although they got a player in decline. Fitzpatrick goes back to Miami. Look, the Dolphins, I don't know how they're going to cover anybody. I mean, if you look at that secondary, it's Kohu and it's Storm Duck. And it's all these guys who, quite frankly, are more of a, you know, either a borderline starter or a developmental player. Jonnu Smith going to the Steelers, look, he'll help them. They'll go two tight ends because they don't have great receivers beyond Metcalf. But I would argue that those two teams, they're not the worst teams in the AFC by any stretch, but I would argue they're the most directionless teams in the AFC. They're not bad, but they're not really good. They're not winning anything. The Steelers feel like they're trying to just win a playoff game, which they haven't done in almost a decade. I have no idea what the Dolphins do. The Dolphins, it feels like they just can't accept the fact they need to blow it up.
Matt Verderam here on the Western Hotline. Sorry, Matt, just had Danny Gare walk by me and wanted to say goodbye. He's a former Buffalo Sabre. His name is hanging in the rafters, so didn't mean to scoot out of here for 1 second there. Yeah, you got it. Listen, I understand why both teams make it, though, right? I mean, like, if you're the Dolphins, Jalen Ramsey's not going to play for you. You have to get something for him. You kind of are in that position. So, you know, even though you may feel like, okay, I'm giving up a really good player, you're not going to have that player anyway for you. In the meantime, I've also had a little pushback on the Steelers are going all in. I don't think they bridged the gap with the Ravens, but I at least feel like they feel they're doing everything they can this year to be able to try and do that.
They're better this year than they were a year ago in the sense that Rodgers, even in his declining state, is a much better quarterback than anybody who was playing on them last year. So they're better in that regard. Metcalf is better than Pickens. The only thing that I wonder with Pittsburgh is just, look, then why not just keep Pickens for one more year and have him in Metcalf and just say, look, if we're going to go all in to try to really make a push in the North and even beyond, okay, we're going to keep Pickens. I understand they got a third-round pick for him. If they let him walk in free agency, they could get a compensatory third-round pick for him. Like, I don't know that – now there's more to it than that. We could spend 10 minutes on how compensatory picks works, but in theory they could have done that. You know, I don't have a problem necessarily. Like, I don't think they got worse with the Ramsey trade. I think they probably got slightly better because Jonnu Smith will come in and Arthur Smith will utilize him. But I guess I just kind of look at them and think, what is their ceiling? In my opinion, their ceiling is to be a wild card team and maybe the top one, maybe the number five seed, and go beat Houston or something in a playoff game and then get annihilated in Buffalo or Kansas City or wherever they end up going. But I think when I think of the Steelers, I think of a team that is competing for championships. And the last 5-6 years, it's been a whole lot of just, hey, let's try to win 9 games. Let's try to win 10 games. And I think if they had kept Pickens, you know, I would feel a little differently about the direction of the team this year. I just feel like they're, probably a 9-10 win team that, yeah, they can win a playoff game, but that's probably the ceiling of what they are.
Matt Verderam joining me here. The Steelers and Dolphins have a pretty substantial trade over the weekend. And then the Dolphins, after trading Jonnu Smith, go out and sign Darren Waller. Trade for him. He's going to come back out of retirement. I don't know, though. I mean, this feels like it's maybe a little bit spinning wheels. Yeah, he was a very, very good receiving tight end for the Raiders. But, I mean, he retired. And I don't know what that's going to do for their offense. How do you see him fitting in there and the impact he can make?
So I got to be honest, I don't think he's going to make any impact. I mean, he's been retired, as you mentioned, last year. And before that, he was either not good or hurt for years. I mean, this isn't a guy who, was great before he retired and now he's coming back. Okay, maybe, right? Like, I could maybe see that. He's hurt all the time. I mean, Darren Waller is a great story. Got his life together. After kind of flaming out in Baltimore, as I believe it was a 6th-round pick, went to the Raiders, and really, earned generational wealth and deservedly so. He was a terrific tight end for a stretch of time there. But at this point, he's just, like the rest of us, aging, and I don't see him going into Miami and all of a sudden having a great year. Be an excellent story. He does it. It'd be a great story. I'd be happy for him. But I just don't see that. And again, I would look at Miami and kind of say what I said earlier. Like, what is the direction? What are you doing? To me, I got to tell you, I think that the Pats are better than the Dolphins this year. I think the Patriots are going to be second place in that division over Miami. I just don't see it. I look at the Dolphins. You got a bunch of guys who you're kind of hoping and wishing stay healthy more than you actually think they're going to. Guys like Chubb and Phillips and now Darren Waller. You know, you just wonder, if they don't start well, if they're 1-4 out of the gate, do they trade Hill? Because Hill's got a $52 million cap hit next year, which is the last year of his deal. Would they move him? Would they trade it? It feels like they've kind of got to accept their fate here, but they don't want to yet. And so now we're at this impasse where they're doing stuff like adding Darren Waller.
Matt Verderam on the West Her Hotline. As far as the AFC East is concerned, because now you have the Dolphins making some moves, I just don't think there's... Let me say it this way. I think the gap might be wider this year than it has been even in the past few years between the Bills and the next best team. And the next best team might be the New England Patriots. How do you see it?
Like I said, I think the Pats are the next best team, and I agree with you. I think the gap is massive. I think of all the divisions in the AFC, if you said to me, which team can you just not see finishing anywhere but first, it's Buffalo. Like, Houston's better than everybody else in the AFC South, but like, there's a world where Jacksonville rises up with Liam Cohen, or maybe even, you know, Indianapolis, they get lightning in a bottle with one of these quarterbacks. Like, okay, I would pick Houston, but fine. The AFC North, I think we all agree, there's at least three teams that are viable playoff teams. And then in the AFC West, yes, would I pick Kansas City? Yes, I would. But at the same point, you know, Denver is good, and the Chargers are good enough. It's okay, you know what? Maybe there is a world. Maybe something happens. As long as Josh Allen is upright, I just don't see any world of the Bills don't win that division by, you know, four games. I just don't see it. I think New England might even fight for a wild card spot. I think they're intriguing. But the Bills are so much better than those teams. And quite honestly, you know, as long as they just split with New England, which, of course, they could even do better, but even if they just split with them, I just don't see – I mean, how's New England going to beat them out? It would require significant injuries in Buffalo. As long as the Bills are just remotely healthy, yeah, they should cruise to their sixth straight AFC title.
Matt does the football show on KC Sports Network, follows the Chiefs, talks a lot about them. So let's talk about the AFC West. Different situation there. The gap might be closing in the AFC West. The Chiefs are still the best team, but how close is the next team and who is it?
I think it's Denver. You know, look, the Chargers get a lot of national love and really have for quite some time. The Chargers, I would argue the Chargers are worse than they were a year ago. Now, of course, look, we don't know what the draft class is going to bring. Like, Omarion Hampton could come in and be Saquon, and then all of a sudden we're having a different conversation. But, you know, you look at what they lost and what they gained in free agency. They added Mekhi Becton, who I like, who will help the interior of that line, although that's still a question mark. They're still not great on the inside. And then you kind of look at them defensively. Look, they lost Bosa to the Bills. They lost Christian Fulton to the Chiefs. They lost Asante Samuel Jr. You know, they brought back Mack on a one-year deal. Mack last year, you could really start to kind of see the age. He was still good, but he wasn't the player he was even a couple of years ago. And then offensively, Josh Palmer also goes to the Bills. And you look at that receiving core and go, it's McConkey and what? It's Mike Williams? Good luck to you. I mean, that is a big ask of Herbert to go in there and throw the ball if they're in a game where they can't run. The Broncos on the flip side, look, the offense is still so-so. I mean, you have Sutton and you have a lot of question marks, but they're going to be phenomenal defensively. I mean, if Greenlaw and Hufanga both coming over from the Niners, they can even be just reasonably healthy. That might be the best defense in the NFL. I think Denver is going to be the second-place team. I think the Raiders are better, but they still have a lot to do. Look, I still think the Chiefs win that division by probably like three games, but I do think Denver is not a fluke. I think Denver, as long as Bo Nix doesn't just crater, I think they're a playoff team. I think they're improved, and Sean Payton's a great coach. So I think the Broncos are good. I still think the Chiefs will clear them by, you know, a handful of games.
What is the scenario for the Chiefs to A, get right back to where they've been and even win a Super Bowl maybe?
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What is the scenario for how the Chiefs might fall off and another team can either catch them or they bow out in the playoffs?
For the first part of it, I would just tell you health. I mean, I don't think people realized last year how beat up they were, even though they went 15-2 and got back to the Super Bowl. Rashee Rice missed three quarters of the year and the playoffs. Hollywood Brown played two games all year long. Harrison Butker missed a big chunk of the year. Isaiah Pacheco missed most of the year. Charles Omenihu missed most of the year. Jalen Watson missed most of the year. I mean, these are all guys who they really rely on. And then Worthy, of course, he was healthy. But he's a rookie. He played pretty poorly the first half of the year and was awesome the second half of the season. So I think it's just, for them, it's health. And then also the left side of the line. That's probably, if I had a barometer of how the Chiefs are going to play this year, I'd just say, tell me how the left side of that line plays out. Because you know, they draft Josh Simmons. They brought in Jalen Moore. Left tackle was a disaster for them last year. They played four different left tackles, some because of performance issues, some because of injury issues. So that's a big part of it. As far as, like, how do they fall back? Look, it's because the left side's a disaster. That would be why. It's because...
How they address that, Matt? What does that look like this year?
So they traded away Joe Tooney because they couldn't afford to pay him and Trey Smith. So they're going to pay Trey Smith. I would imagine he gets a new deal in the next 10, 11 days for that deadline on the 15th. They trade Tooney to the Bears. Kingsley Suamataia, who was a second-round pick a year ago, was a failed experiment attack. It was foot speed, just not there. So they kick him inside. He played week 18, the meaningless game against Denver. He played very well in that game. So the Chiefs believe, based on that and having him do practice reps, they feel like, look, he's not going to be Joe Tooney by any means, but that he can go in there and play a reasonable left tackle or a left guard. At left tackle, they signed Jalen Moore from the Niners, who's played 12 games in his career, played a handful of them last year when Trent Williams got hurt. They signed him to a two-year deal. But they also went out and they drafted Josh Simmons from Ohio State with the 32nd overall pick. He's the leader in the clubhouse starter. They drafted him coming off a torn patella tendon, thinking, hey, look, he might be ready middle of camp, late part of camp, they'll ease him in. He's going to be full go here at the start of camp. He was full go even in their mini camp. So that's kind of the hope that they have, is that you're getting a youth movement on the left side with Simmons and Suamataia. But if they fail this year, that's going to be why. It's going to be because they bet big on the left side, and they didn't win, and so they've got to be this really dink and dunk team because they can't block. I still think even with that, they'll win the division and be in the AFC divisional round, something like that. But if something's going to sink them, it's going to be because that left side of the line is just a train wreck.
Matt Verderam joining me here on the West Her Hotline. I know that you have been putting together a special project for Sports Illustrated. I'll kind of let you say what you want to say about it, so I don't reveal too much, but not too little. So go right ahead and let everybody know what's going on.
Sure, yeah, and Sal, you're part of it. So what we did, we have a blue ribbon panel. I've been at SI. This will be my third year covering the league for Sports Illustrated. And so the first 2 years, I'm a big history guy. I love the history of the sport, and so we started doing these really large projects that we reveal right before the Super Bowl, usually the week leading up to it. And the first couple of years, it was like top 50 most influential teams was one of them. Top 50 games of the Super Bowl era we did last year. And it's a fun project. We have a blue ribbon panel. I usually write up each of the games or each of the teams, depending on what it is. And then I will reach out to somebody who either played or coached for one of these teams. Or was involved in the game. So it's a lot of fun. We're doing another one this year where we're in the process right now. The list is about to be finalized here in the next few days. The top 60 Super Bowl moments, which of course is corresponding with the 60th anniversary of the Super Bowl in February. And we put together a panel of 25 people, Sal, you being one of them. And it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward this summer to talking to a lot of guys who played in the games, who made those moments happen. And give fans an inside view, both in print, which it'll run our print, and also digital online. Give fans an inside view of, hey, look, not only do you remember this moment, you can never forget if you're a football fan, but here's the guy who made the moment, or one of the guys who made the moment. Here's their inside perspective of what happened. And it's always a fun project, and it's always kind of a fascinating look at the league from an insider's view.
Pretty cool. Yeah, I'm really excited to be a part of it. Thanks for asking me. I will tell you, pretty hard to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pretty hard to kind of look at everything and say, man, there's been so many awesome moments putting together and kind of figuring all them out. And everybody's got their own perspective on different what that means to them, right? You know what I mean? What that perspective of a moment is.
It's interesting because, you know, I would argue the three that I've done, this being the third, this is probably the most challenging. A, it's the biggest. The other two are top 50. This is top 60 because of the anniversary. But also, you're right. I mean, moment is very subjective. You know, some people may look at something and go, well, it's more of a snapshot rather than an actual, you know, moment in the game. And so you rate it a little bit differently. I would say of the 60 that are going to be on this list, there's maybe a dozen that everybody voted for. Every single panelist was like, yes, absolutely. Maybe it's a touch more than that, maybe 15. But every, you know, there are just so many things that have happened over the first 59 years of Super Bowl that you look at and go, yeah, you know what? How could you forget that? How could you not include that? And maybe there are moments you look at and go, yeah, that was huge. And then you start writing them down, having a rank, and you're like, man, that's like 24th on the list. Like, really? But it's just so hard, you know, to figure out that number one. And we have, I think, two lists more to put into the hopper. And I can tell you, I honestly don't know what the first three moments are going to be because they're so jumbled up. It's been fun. It's been fun to do it. And I appreciate that all the panelists take it really seriously. And it really makes for a good list and it makes for a fun project.
Yeah, very cool. I really appreciate it. Thanks for kind of bearing with me today while we're down here at the Lecom Harbor Center watching some hockey and a lot of things going on around me. I am also shivering. It is cold in this hockey rink, Matt.
Hey, listen, I remember those days. I mean, it's an ice rink. It's not going to be balmy. So, you know, get out of there and get some sun.
You got it. Tell everybody where they can find all this work and the project that you're working on. And, again, thankful to be a part of it.
Yeah, no, thanks. You find all my written work at SI.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Verderam. I'm there way more often than I should be. I've got a Patreon podcast, the Matt Verderam Show, which in full disclosure is geared toward the Chiefs, which is how I kind of came up covering the league. But, you know, if you're a Bills fan, you want an inside look at the enemy, you'll get a good one there. So, and I have Bills guys on throughout the years. Obviously, they're probably the only team that I think Chiefs fans really fear in the AFC. I don't think anybody else strikes any fear into the Chiefs and their fans, but the Bills are probably the one exclusion there. So, yeah, plenty of ways to find my work.
You got it. Thanks a lot, buddy, again. Thanks a lot for bearing with me today, and let's catch up sometime during training camp, all right?
You got it. Anytime.
All right, that is Matt Verderam here on the West Her Hotline. Good to catch up with him. We're going to take a time out here from the Lecom Harbor Center. When we come back, we'll do a short segment, and then I want to replay again Kevin Adams from yesterday. I had a lot of people say to me, hey, I missed Kevin Adams yesterday. It was kind of a quick turnaround. We played it for you. We also talked with Paul Hamilton, and we talked with Matt Bove about everything that Kevin Adams said yesterday. So I want you to rehear what he said about Bo Byram, about Alex Tuch, and everything else going on with the Buffalo Sabres. So we'll get to Kevin Adams once again. We'll replay that press conference, the scrum from yesterday. But that'll happen after we come back here. We talk for a little while, and we get on going here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR. All right, so getting back here to the Lecom Harbor Center. What do you got planned for the 4th of July weekend, and do you love fireworks, Joe Calley?
Well, I'm not a pyrotechnic myself. I don't like using the fireworks. I like viewing from a distance, let's just say that. But it's just hanging out with friends and family. I can't really complain about that. The weather's supposed to be beautiful, so no rain in sight, which is great.
Yeah, I like that. It is a really good weather weekend for the 4th of July. I am not either. I agree with you. Like, I'll go if someone says, hey, I'm going to blow off a bunch of stuff. That's not my jam. Like, I'm not part of that, but I'll watch it. I like to watch it go up in the air and kind of see all the pretty colors and everything. I like to do that part of it. But if you're calling me up and be like, dude, you want to come over and, like, you know, blow some M80s up? I'm like, nah, that's not really my thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I feel like there's a lot of room for error with that, and I don't really want to be caught in the middle of that.
No, me neither. And I have the guys were talking this morning. I guess you were part of that. Jeremy said they did a show once about people sharing their fireworks stories, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I don't think most fireworks stories would be great, to be honest with you. They might be, like, pretty, like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. That's terrifying.
And that was the one call that came in this morning. It was a it was a bad story. So yeah.
Yes, I heard that. And I'm like, oh my goodness. By the way, that was watching on the YouTube channel. You can go to YouTube, WGR 550 on YouTube, and you can watch that. But so I do have one. It was kind of crazy. It wasn't that tragic, but I think people listening might remember when I was in maybe a senior in high school, maybe it was right around that time. We used to go every year to Cheektowaga Town Park. And I don't even know if they even have fireworks still over there anymore, but back then they did. It was the place to go. If you grew up in Cheektowaga, you went to Town Park every year, watch the fireworks, put out the, you know, and put out the blanket and whatever. And my friends and I, we went there. And one year, the fireworks went a bit awry, and there's the hospital right across the street. Is that St. Joe's maybe? Right there? And I remember the fireworks, like, landed on the roof. And it started a small fire in some capacity or something like that. It was crazy.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. That's the danger of it all. And you're right in the fact of most of those stories that would have probably come through probably would not have been the best. Similar to that, probably, you know?
But listen, and I'm not... we hope everybody has a very safe 4th of July. If that's what your thing is, and you go somewhere and you do that, and you're a part of it, it's great. I actually have relatives that they have... big piece of property. They've blown off fire. They've done fireworks at their house in years past. Like, I've been to things like that, friends. So, hey, if that's what you do, that's cool. I will watch, and I will be somewhere watching tomorrow night. We'll do that and have a good time for the 4th of July. We hope everybody has a great 4th of July, a happy, safe, healthy 4th of July. Notice I didn't talk anything about the Yankees Blue Jays because they're playing tonight in Canada again. And the Yankees blew that game yesterday to fall to second place, I believe, officially in the AL East. I think they're tied right now. But last night, very, very tough for the Yankees. They were down 7-0, and then 7-0 in the first inning, then 8-0. Came back to make it 9-9, and then blew the game at the end. But that series continues, as well as a lot of other baseball, because it's 4th of July, and that's what we do. We play baseball, we watch hockey, and we look forward to training camp. In the meantime, we're going to be hearing from Kevin Adams, yesterday's scrum with the media. We'll take a timeout here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and then Kevin Adams meets with the Buffalo media. We'll replay that for you from yesterday, so you can hear all the things that we debated and talked about today with Paul Hamilton and Matt Bove here on the Extra Point Show.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.